Hi, my name is Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa.
Really excited to be here. I was sick the last couple days, and I agreed to come and speak on this panel a while ago. So I like to think that, you know, regardless of my physical condition, that I really wanted to be here to suit up and show up, because this program has saved my life. It's kept me sober now for over 3 years, and what has helped with that is mostly working with other people. And the theme, of course, for the panel is bridging the gap, and in my case, it's bridging the gap in a different language. Right now, I'm working with the Hispanic community in Tucson, and I'm currently their secretary for the Spanish intergroup, right there on South 6th and 36th, their central office. And it hasn't been an easy, it hasn't been very easy for me, mostly because the autonomy is different in the Spanish community. They have like a different, they don't have such a like such a different array of people within their spectrum. They're mostly it's middle-aged men who probably have heard the message in jails and in institutions, and the good thing about that is you see them wanting to take that into their, and you know, outside of the institutions and jails, which is amazing, because the Hispanic community is still kind of like almost really primal. Like, you know, the men are the breadwinners, the women stay home, and you don't see a lot of women in their community either, and you don't see a lot of young people trying to get sober in the Spanish community. But I got involved with it about 3 years ago when I first got sober. A strong suggestion for me was to get involved. I got plugged in with Tacupaw, and I immediately took on a service position as the Spanish liaison. And I mostly did it for my own reasons, I guess, because, you know, my background is Hispanic, and my parents, my grandparents are from Mexico, and I really wanted to actually just learn more Spanish by going to the Spanish meetings. And I did that, you know, because I knew what the concepts were in English and in the program, and so I wanted to learn, you know, I wanted to learn it in a different language. So doing that, you know, like, I got involved, and I was trying to make, you know, the announcements and trying to get Tacupaw involved with the Hispanic community. And there was a lot of resistance. There was a lot of, mostly because of the language barrier. You know, people who are uncomfortable speaking English and people who are uncomfortable speaking Spanish, there aren't too many people who will, like, you know, freely speak both. And I did. I mean, I even in my own family, I grew up and I got corrected for what I was saying. And it kind of sounds silly when you say something. And I think, you know, people who speak Spanish, they feel silly when they say something funny in English. But really, it's really just about doing something that's selfless, and something that's not going to benefit me in the long run. Making the announcements at the Spanish meetings, I got more and more involved with the Spanish community, and they were really very hospitable, very welcoming. You know, like, something I didn't expect, because you wouldn't expect them to really be, you know, friendly to outside people. But I think that's just how it is in any AA community. Like, you want to see anyone and everyone get sober. So, you know, they were very welcoming, and they made me feel like I was at home. Their meetings are different. They're kind of like a panel. They will have somebody speak up in front of a podium for about 20 minutes, as opposed to how, you know, English-speaking meetings are everyone's in a circle and people just kind of speak for 3 to 4 minutes while they're in their own chair. They don't do chips. They do celebrate birthdays in a big way. You know, they'll have the menudo, the pozole, they'll have it all like set up after the meeting, and they really like to they really embrace the newcomer. And I really I really think that's a very strong aspect of the Hispanic community, is that they welcome anyone and everyone, especially the newcomer. If there's a newcomer at a meeting, they'll make the entire meeting about that one person who came, you know, for the first time. I think that's awesome. having, you know, looked at the book and some of the literature that talks about working with others, it says in the very beginning of chapter 7, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. So, you know, that for me is like, you know, regardless of the things that I might disagree with or the things that I might feel like it should be done this way, you know, I have to set that ego aside. You know, like really, I don't ever go to try to like bring the communities together with what I can get out of it. It's really, what can I do? How can I be the bridge between the two communities? Last year, Tucson had the ASCABA committee conference, and we had a very heavy Spanish participation in that conference, and we were really excited about it. We had somebody come and you know, actually do the translation from the main speakers. And you know, we wore the headsets, and people were really excited about it. They were really happy to see, you know, other people come and participate. And you know, it was just a way for the Spanish community to show their support for what we're doing as young people. I just started going to their intergroup meetings to make announcements about, you know, the conference that was coming up. And it just so happened that when I was there, they had already had like three meetings where their treasurer didn't show up. And when it comes to money, you know, alcoholics are pretty adamant about their money. They have, you don't mess with their money. So they decided, you know, like they needed somebody to step up. And that was another thing that I noticed about the Spanish community is, a lot of them would rather stand off to the side and criticize about what needed to be done and kind of like condemn what's not getting done rather than what they could bring to it. So I just stood for the position, and I had been working as a treasury for for over a year. And I really got a lot out of it. I got, you know, I got the experience on how to be more responsible, how to be accountable. You know, whatever money was coming in, I made sure I kept a very detailed, accurate, everything was all in order, and I had a report for them. And they were, you know, they really appreciated that. And I think we just recently had elections in the Hispanic central office. And I would go home, and I would tell, you know, I would tell my boyfriend or my friend about how, you know, they're driving me crazy. I can't, you know, this is such a like lame position. I don't know why I decided to do it, but I'd still do it. You know, I'd still show up. And then, you know, lo and behold, another year comes around, and now I want to be the secretary. So I really want to just, you know, be there to do a lot of the administrative work and just trying to help them in, you know, in the sense where I'm trying to build the unity, because there's been a lot of separation between the different meetings in Tucson. But I'm just trying to be the example, you know, like I remember when I first came into the rooms, like I would hear people talk, and I would listen to other people's experience, strength, and hope, and I would say, I want that, you know, that I want whatever that person has. And I would like to be the example in that sense, where people could say, well, she's young, she's a female, she could do it, I think I could do it too. And that's just, you know, what I try to do when it comes to, you know, bringing the two communities together. But I get a lot out of the, you know, chapter 7 when it comes to working with others. Faith alone is insufficient to be vital. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. So that's just my constructive action. Like, you know, whatever needs to be done, whatever it is that, you know, whatever it is that where I could be of service, that's where I feel like I'm the most useful. And that's where I know that I made the right decision to stay sober, because, you know, more and more time goes by, and, you know, it's just what's working for me. You know, I don't try to push my own ideas and my own thoughts onto other people. I really just try to be of maximum helpfulness to others. That's what the book talks about. And really, if I have my God with me, then it says, keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. So as long as I stick to these principles and really trust in the first tradition, where unity depends upon AA unity. The first tradition is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. So my own personal recovery is what's going to help unify the rest of AA as a whole. You know, like I'm just one pawn in a chess game, and I'm just part of a whole. So this has really just helped me be a part of, and really just know that, you know, people are rooting for me. People actually care about me. People don't, you know, don't want to be my friend because they want something from me. You know, like I could be a true friend to somebody today, and I could be an example to others. And I don't know if my time is up. But yeah, so how much time?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay. I don't really have anything else prepared, but that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Vanessa. Our second speaker is Stan W. from Casa Grande.
My name is Stan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 11th of 2000. For that, I'm very grateful.
I'm
going to tell you guys the other side of bridging the gap. I got sober in the penitentiary. I was doing 7 years, and somebody invited me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd never been to an AA meeting in my entire life. I got a lot of DWIs over the years. People told me I might want to go try Alcoholics Anonymous, but that wasn't for me. I would not go. You couldn't drag me into the room kicking and screaming. I would not go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It had been suggested throughout my lifetime several times. But when I went in there, I didn't know anybody had ever been to prison. I didn't know anything about prison except what I saw on TV, and I didn't like that very much. So when I got sentenced, I got down on my knees and I said, God, please get me through this alive, and I'll never drink or use again as long as I live. And I've said that prayer before, but this time I really meant it, or he really heard me, one of the two. I'm not sure which, but that was my bottom. That's when I stopped digging and started coming back up. I got there, and I was really scared. I was acting tough, you know what I mean? But I was really scared on the inside. And somebody asked me to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And up to that point in my life, anybody ever asked me to go to AA, I'd be like, fuck no, hell no, I'm not going. But this day, I remember saying that prayer. It was like I just said it, and it was probably 7 months prior to that. And I said, yeah, I'll go to this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting with you. And the guy became my sponsor. He took me through the steps in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I stand here today in front of you is because of good sponsorship. I didn't know what I needed, but my sponsor did. I started working the steps. I got to three. He made me start sponsoring two guys. And the one guy was going faster than the other one, and I said, he's going to catch me. He said, no, he's not, because you're going to hurry up. So I worked the fourth step, and I worked the fifth step. This guy got to the fourth step. I got into six and seven. And it went that way throughout my time. I didn't realize why he was pushing me so hard, but my higher power had already talked to him and told him exactly what I needed. I needed to carry the message in order to keep this thing. So I started sponsoring guys, and I did the same thing to them. When they got to three, I made them start sponsoring two guys. We were in a yard this side of the hill from Safford, and no AA meetings came in there from the outside. But this guy that grabbed me and took me in there had been in Alcoholics Anonymous before, and he got drunk and ran over a couple of people, so he had to go to prison for that. Anyway, I didn't really realize why he was pushing me so hard, but then they rolled him up and he got out. And I realized why, that he was pushing me, because he wanted to hurry up and get me through the steps before he left. Anyway, I called my old bosses in Alcoholics Anonymous in Scottsdale, and he had about 16, 17 years at the time. And I wrote him a letter and asked him to come speak at the prison. And he did, and he brought a couple of people with him, and they got all excited, and they started bringing people with them. And they started coming there, and we had meetings every day of the week. You know, it was straight convict meetings at first, but then we got some outside help. When I got out, I got picked up at the gate, and this is a really good thing, too, because I had $5,000 in my pocket, and I'm fresh out of the joint, convict. But the three people in Alcoholics Anonymous came and picked me up, and they took me back to Phoenix. And they hung out with me for the day. They took me to the halfway house that I was going to be in and told me where a couple of meetings were. I started going to those meetings. You know, I lost my driver's license for 19 years because of DWIs. And I started going to this one meeting, and this guy told me I should sponsor somebody. I got a really good story, and I should sponsor somebody. I'm like, nah, I don't have a car, and I don't have a driver's license. And he was a youngster, too, like 20-something, you know. And he'd tell me, you got to sponsor some people. And I'm like, nah, I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a car. They might want me to come over to their house and do step work or something. I've already, you know, I sponsored a bunch of guys in the joint. I'm like, I'm done. You know, I've done my service work. Anyway, a couple of months later, all the fines were paid. I got my driver's license, got a nice car. And I'm at this same meeting, showing off my driver's license. I got my license back after 19 years. This youngster comes up to me and says, what's your excuse now, Grandpa? I said, okay. So I started talking about working the steps. I started talking about my sponsor saving my ass and pushing me when I needed to be pushed. And people started asking me to sponsor them. And I got kind of excited about that. And it's everything that's happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my ass. Because my higher power makes everything work to where I get to stay sober. Everybody pushes me in the right directions. Get a sponsor, work the steps. Sponsor somebody, help them work the steps. This same young kid asked me to go speak at a meeting at Banner Health in Scottsdale. And it was an adolescence inpatient rehabilitation place. And I went in there and I spoke. This little girl, like 16 years old, 14, 15 years old, whatever, she came up to me after me. She said, can I give you a hug? I said, yeah, I guess, you know, and I gave her a little hug. She said, this part of your story really touched me. And I was blown away because she was a little kid. And she started getting loaded when she was like 11. And I got hooked on that. I started taking meetings into there. I started helping this guy, and then he turned it over to me. I moved to Casa Grande in 08, and there was a place here called Park Place, and it was for adolescents inpatient. And you guys got to understand, my kids are all 15, 14, 13 years old at the time, so I'm trying to figure out how to talk to kids, you know. So I'm in there trying to carry the message and trying to learn about being a father to teenagers, because my kids weren't teenagers when I went to prison, but they were teenagers when I got out. So I kept doing that, and like I said, my higher power was pushing me in the right direction, because I got a chance to make amends to my two younger kids, and I could talk to them, you know what I mean, because I was used to talking to adolescent teenagers. And then somebody asked me to take a meeting into River Source. Howard and I started one there on Saturday, and we carried the message in there because Park Place closed down. And then I started taking one into Part 4. I can't go back into the prisons because my violence score is a 5, which is the worst it can be, and I can't get approved to go back in there. But I can carry the message into the institutions. And what saved my ass was those people picking me up and then getting me involved You know, I try to carry that into the institutions, that when they get out of the institution, the most important thing they do is, no matter where, because a lot of people come to Casa Grande and go to treatment, but they go back to Phoenix or Tucson or wherever they go. And that the message I try to carry to those kids is, when you get out of there, you have to really get involved in your program. Because that's what saved my bacon. If I hadn't gotten involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here. You know, I had a bunch of money in my pocket. I was free again. And left to my own devices, I would drink again. But everybody pushed me in the right direction. And Christmas has always been really tough for me because my wife took my kids away at Christmas time. And I'd been loaded. I'd been on a bender for a while, I know. We had Christmas presents like 3 feet high all the way around the Christmas tree. And she took all three of my boys and left because I was hammered drunk, of course. So it was my fault, but she left, took my kids, and I got up Christmas morning and all these presents and no kids to open them. So Christmas has always been really screwed up for me in my head, okay? So when it came my first Christmas after getting out of the joint, it was suggested, or it wasn't suggested, they told me that we have a commitment for you to sell Cokes at the Alcathon for Christmas. And that was you guys saving me. Didn't even know me, didn't know I had a problem. You know what I mean? But you guys led me in the right direction. Everything I've learned in these rooms. And I have to tell you guys, I got out of the joint. I'm a convict, I got a bad criminal record, and I don't think I'm going to get a good job or anything. But I got a job, and I worked really hard, and I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I continued to work hard. And somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to start my own business. And I started my own company. And I don't have to worry about working for somebody else because I have a criminal record, because I work for myself. And other people, I have a sponsee that works for me. And he doesn't have to worry about his record or nothing because he works for me. I don't care. I'm an ex-con. You know what I mean? I work hard. I make a living. And I do the deal. I continue to carry the message because it was freely given to me. I have to give it away. And I have a guy right now that I'm taking through the steps, and we did a fifth step last night, and it was just amazing how his story was like mine and the lights were coming on. You know, a guy asked me about, I don't know, 5 years ago, I was struggling pretty bad with business. And he said, how many guys are you currently taking through the steps? And I said, 2. He said, okay, good. He said, make sure you always continue to do that. And every time one of my sponsees that has some time is having trouble, I ask them the same thing. How many guys are you currently taking through the steps? Because if you're currently doing that, you're reworking them yourself. You know, I learn stuff about myself every day. I learn about staying sober from you guys. And I pray and I meditate today, which I never thought I would do. But I get the answers. God talks through you guys. And last night I was at a meeting, and somebody told me to pay attention when you're talking, because sometimes you'll say something God wants you to hear. And I'm sharing, and I don't know where this shit came from, but I needed to hear it. It was something that I needed to hear, and it came out of my mouth. But when I meditate, I always listen. And I was told a long time ago, when you read the stories in the back of the big book, look for the similarities, not the differences. And that's helped me a lot, because I was at a speaker meeting one time and a guy said something right at the beginning that I didn't want to even hear what he had to say after that. But I sat on my hands and I said the serenity prayer and I listened for the message. And there was a message in there that I needed to hear. It doesn't matter, you know, there's so many different kinds of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every one of you have helped me to be where I'm at today. I get to stand here before you sober, and I don't have to put that shit into my body anymore. My sponsor told me that when I was new and I didn't get it. He said, you don't have to put that shit into your body anymore. And I didn't understand, but now I comprehend that. And I get to pass this on. You know, what was freely given to me, I get to give it to somebody else. And that, to me, is what I do to bridge the gap, you know, because it was bridged for me. How much time do I have? I don't know. Okay. all right. Anyway, so I was taken into an institution. So then I started taking my sponsees into the institutions where I take meetings. And they've taken them over. I don't have to do it anymore. I still get to go, you know, when I want to, but I don't have to. They take the ball and they run with it, and they get excited about it also. This thing works, and it works all the way down the line. When I moved to Casa Grande, I had half a dozen sponsees in Phoenix, and I told them that I was leaving, and I didn't know if I wanted to give them up or not, but most of them, three of them, stuck with me. And one of them sponsoring a group of guys, and they're sponsoring a group of guys, and they're sponsoring a group of guys. And I spoke at this halfway house in Phoenix recently, not recently, 6 months ago, whatever. And I heard these kids in their front row, they're all talking and stuff. That's my great, great, great grand sponsor up there. And it's like, that's cool. I didn't know. I have no idea. You know what I mean? But I'm like, that's cool. That's amazing. Never thought any shit like that would ever happen to me. Thank you guys for letting me share.
Thank you, Stan. Our third speaker is from my home group, the Free Spirit Group, and New Pasqua Yaqui Tribe in South Tucson, Louis P. So you better tell it good.
Fuck. I mean, hi. My name's Louis. So I'm an alcoholic, chubby alcoholic. Yeah, thank you. You know, if you haven't recognized this shirt, this is going to be for the. You can actually get one of your very own. They have them right out there at the table for Vegas, Wacky Paw, Western Area Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's funny because Wacky Paw was like a unifying event for me last year. Our home group. Took a van, a 12-passenger van with 12 people in it, which was the most uncomfortable ride, for like 16 hours straight to go to Wacky Paw. And yeah, it sucked getting there, but it was an awesome experience just to be there. You know what I mean? And there were so many of us, and it was, the Big Book talks about how people, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are people that normally would not mix, right? Yeah. I've always kind of been like that. By the way, just a precursor, my sobriety date, or actually I call it my dry date, is 4/26/06. And that's a direct result of having the best home group in the world, Free Spirit. and then also sponsorship, the 12 step at work and alcohol, 12 steps. Sorry, I haven't eaten, so I'm like, grr. But work at Alcoholics Anonymous. That's really what it comes down to. And I still fall short of my chosen ideals or whatever. But like I said, you know, the Big Book says that we're people that normally would not mix. And I always felt that way. Even when I was a kid, I was one of those guys that normally would not mix. I kind of prided myself on it. You know, I hung out in Third Ward in Houston, Texas. And if you've ever been there, like Scott and Elgin over by the U of H, it's a predominantly black neighborhood. And I stuck out like a sore thumb, And growing up, I'm half... Well, it kind of depends on who I'm talking to and what I am. It kind of depends on what side of town I'm on, you know. But like when I'm on the north side, I'm Spanish and French. And when I'm on the south side, I'm Mexican and Irish. And either way, I'm not lying. Because, I mean, they all fit. Because I'm like a mutt. But... You know, it didn't matter where I went. I never really felt like I fit in. And being a half white and half Latin kid, I'd go hang out with the white people. They'd be like, "Nah, man, you Mexican." And I'd go over to hang out with the Mexicans. They'd be like, "Nah, man, you white." You know what I mean? So I never really tried to fit in anywhere anyway. The reason I was asked to get up here and ramble on for a few minutes is, and you better time me because I'm a member of On and On. I was asked to come up here and speak about bridging the gap with the Native American community. And that's something that I wholeheartedly believe in, and it's something that I have activity in on a daily basis. A lot of people don't know my motives on that. really what it comes down to is I had a brother when I was a kid. Well, yeah, I guess he's still kind of my brother, but he's dead. He got shot in the head over some outside issues, and I carry the same caliber of bullet in my left leg that he caught in his head. He was a Cherokee Indian. He was my half-brother. And I don't mean like a white people Cherokee. You know what I'm saying? Because you know how they are. I'm Indian too. I'm Cherokee. Every freaking white person I know says they're Cherokee. But whatever. Anyway. But the he was like a for real, you know, Cherokee. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. And then also I have two children. And their mother is Ponca and Seminole. And I came out here from Oklahoma, got sober in Oklahoma. The way they do it, the Plains Indians, I guess, the way they do it is that, you know, they don't want to marry within your own tribe because, you know, that might be your cousin. You know what I mean? You start fooling around somebody and you're like, oh shit, we're related, you know? So she was like, screw it, I'm just going to get white boys. And that's where I came along. So I've got two children that are very Native American. They don't even look like they're partially white. My little brown homies, I love them. They're so quiet. They just sit there and stare at me. But they're not like me at all. I guess that's where my love for the Native people comes from. You know, throughout my children and throughout my relationship with my brother. Because when I was growing up, my brother was like a father to me. You know what I mean? My dad was a workaholic. He was never really around. So, you know, he was always doing his thing, running his thing or whatever. And my brother was kind of the one that protected me and so on and so forth. And at the same time, as he got older, I lived in his shadow because everybody, you know, he was a pretty good fighter and blah, blah, blah. And everybody always be like, well, you know, I don't know. Just, it was weird, dude. But if you got an older brother, you know what I'm talking about. But either way, what I've come to find is that any time that I want to outreach to another community, it doesn't matter what that community is, the best thing for me to do is to show up and meet them on their terms. Doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter who they are or what they are. You know what I mean? Once again, we're people that normally would not mix. And we're all different, but we're the same. As I like to used to say it when I was on the streets, it's all pink in the middle. But the, you know? But the... Hey! No. But that's the truth. You know, that's the truth. We are human beings. And in the Native American culture, it kind of depends on where you're at and who you're talking to. But for the most part, creator, grandfather, whoever you want to call it, whatever you want to call it, there is no aunts and uncles. It's everybody's a mother. You know, like all my aunts would be all my mothers and all my uncles would be my fathers. Because grandfather is the Great Spirit or God, you know, or creator. And I have a firm belief in that. You know, they say that whenever I came to AA, I learned that expression that God has no grandchildren because we're all a child of God. But I respectfully disagree because we are all grandchildren of God. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of similarities, and it doesn't matter what your culture or your beliefs are. There's something for everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous. Another thing that I come to find in my journey to do outreach, Jesus Christ, that's a long time. Just saying. But the another thing that I have come to find, I literally like this. I feel safe and protected behind this podium. You can't get me. You can't. But the what was I come to find? The
another thing.
I need to eat. Well, shit. What? When I don't eat, I get a little shaky and I can't think straight and blah, 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 blah. But what I've come to find is that a lot of, you know, there's a lot of distrust with a lot of cultures and all in all, no offense to any, you know, of you white people. But there's a lot of distrust with some cultures and white people as a whole. So an Alcoholics Anonymous can be seen as a white organization, even though, well, actually, you know, that was kind of my experience when I got sober in Oklahoma. I walked in and I was like, holy shit, you know, and it's very rare that I ever even see an African-American in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's almost like a chocolate chip in a sea of white milk, you know. Seriously, no offense, but the and I don't know why that is, but I could see how going to a meeting and being the only one, you know, especially as unique as I am, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know about you cats, you might have been different, but when I came to AA, I was different. There was nothing about you that I wanted to do with me, because then that means you might have a solution for me, and I didn't want a solution. I wanted to be all fucked up, you know, because I'm special, I'm unique, so on and so forth. And to be able to walk in with that attitude and actually be different, whether it be my skin tone or whatever, could really probably drive me away, you know? And I could see how that could happen. And I don't know why, if that's why a lot of, within the Native American community, or my experience has been, that there's a lot of things that are recovery related but are not Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat on a committee this last few months ago. Andrea and I both sat on a committee for the Red Road to Wellbriety. And I have no problems with the 12 steps and the Wellbriety movement, because it is a 12-step basin. I don't have a problem with White Bison. I love it. I think it's great. But the, you know, because there's more than one road to get to Denny's. You know what I mean? Whatever works for you, works for you. But whenever you start to separate yourself, like she said, like Vanessa said about that first tradition and the traditions being in place for a reason, I come to find out why these traditions are in place by being on that committee. Just recently, So a lot of the members of my home group went to San Diego for an event. It's called Indians in Sobriety. And it's not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's a recovery-related event, and it's all-encompassing. It's welcoming for all, and we got the staff to be able to bring that back to Tucson. And as the committee formed, you know, a lot of you guys that are on committees, or if you've ever been on a host committee, which I was on ASCIPAW last year, and I know I had to make amends to like the whole committee on more than one occasion. So you know, there's resentments, you know, and egos get flared up, and so on and so forth. But there's no traditions if it's not Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I'm saying? So some of these events that we do, I was on the committee for the Indians in Sobriety, and I had to back off. I had to step down because I could see why there's traditions in place. And I could see how the egos were starting to take in. And because I was kind of the outside voice, I really didn't have a strong voice because I'm on the Adopt a Honky program at the Free Spirit Group. that's what I call it. But the so's Julie.
Yeah.
So's Julie. But, you know, because I just didn't have the same strong of voice, I felt it would probably be better for the relations of AA as a whole, because, you know, people know me as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if my tempers were to flare, or if I were to get just as egotistical, or whatever, just as, like, they're bad. No, they're not bad. If I were to get super egotistical, which I do, then, you know, things could probably be said, and I could probably be a detriment to that society, or to my relations with that society, or for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole to have relations with that society or that culture. You know what I'm saying? So it was best for me to just step down. But if anything, with bridging the gap with anybody, it doesn't matter who it is or what it is, with bridging the gap, the best thing for me to do is to be able to go and meet them on their terms instead of getting them to try and come to me. You know what I mean? Hey, we got this meeting over here. In fact, TACIPAL, the Tucson Area Committee of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, TACI, there's like the best young people's organization in the world. Yeah, Vegas. You heard me. but the, and I've traveled around, so yeah, whatever. But anyway, the oh, next to Flagstaff. Shit, didn't see y'all there. But the we tried originally, there was an outreach program, you know, or we were trying to outreach to various communities like the Latin American community and the Native American community. And it was kind of a thing to like, hey guys, why don't you come over to our meeting? We're having this meeting. We're Tacky Paul. Come see us. You know, come hang out. Come join our group. And nobody showed up. But whenever TACIPAL decided to show up, and we all came as a whole and would show up to the home group and show up to the meetings and get to know everybody and meet everybody on their terms, it all worked out, you know? And we forged relationships and brotherhoods and sisterhoods, because you're my sister, you don't even know. You know, it's weird because just recently, I took over this like cell phone store or whatever, and my schedule completely changed, and I can't make my home group as like I want to, because I can't close the store. But well, yeah. Anyway, but the either way, throughout this last transitional period that I've been going through, you know, Quentin has been on the phone with me, Adam, another member of my home group, has been on the phone with me, and you I see like every day, you know. Drea comes by the store like all the time. Hey, what are you doing? You still sober? You know? Guess what I got? Guess what I got? Anyway, so I mean, I just love that. I love the relationships that I have had the opportunity to make and to build upon in Alcoholics Anonymous by outreaching to each and every person that I can. It doesn't matter who they are, what they are, or where they're from. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it didn't matter who I was, what I was, or where I was from. So it should be like that for everyone. You know? That's my thing on it. So am I done? Can I shut up now? Yeah?
Thank you, Louie. We have a few minutes left. We'd like to open the floor now for any questions or comments for our speakers.
I got a question for this guy here on the right. I'm going to start with some meetings at the Coconino County Jail. And do you got any advice for bringing meetings to the facility real quickly?
I don't know. Just whenever they brought meetings into me in the jail before I went to prison, guy that used to tell us all the time that your alcoholism's out there doing push-ups just waiting for you to get out the door so they can get a hold of you. Just if do what we try to do in treatment centers. Try to get them to try to carry the message that they got to get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous when they get out of there. Because if you want to get sober, it's not that hard to get sober in there. But if you when you get out, lot harder because it's all right there in front of you. That's all I can really tell you. My hat's off to you for taking for going though, because nobody came to the prison that I was at. And I know a lot of one of my very good friends, Mark, right there, he carries messages into the prison now here. And I get to be a part of it. You know what I mean? I get to talk to him about that. It's pretty cool.
My name is Julio. I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to thank you, all three of you guys, for the work that you're doing. I've been to prison meetings, and I've been to Spanish-speaking meetings, and I'm a home member of the Free Spirit Group. And Louis, we don't take you serious at all, man, but we take your sobriety and your energy really, really serious, and we love you, man.
Thanks, Julio. Yeah, just real quick, man, something I was thinking about and where I was going with it, but like I said, I haven't eaten. Whenever we were at that Indians in Sobriety event in San Diego, One thing that whenever we would pray, we would say, Aho Matakiyashi. Matakiyashi was to all my relations, because we're all related. We're all the same. So it doesn't matter, like I said, who you are or what you are.
Oh, I was recorded?
I'm an alcoholic.
Am I?
Like Stan was saying, I bring meetings into the prison, one of the prisons at La Palma. It's a CCA prison, private prison. And that the prisoners that I deal with are all from California. And that right now California has, what they say, budget problems. And there are a lot of guys getting out right now, and I need to find out more for my guys in regards to if anybody knows, like how I can get these guys from California hooked up before they head back. So, because I tell them, they're like, okay, you want to go to a meeting when you get out, but frankly, having somebody on the other side, it's easier to blow off a meeting than it is to blow off a person that's waiting for you. And I think it's important that you put a face, in connection to the fact that you're bridging that gap. By the way, just so you know my background, I have to be Italian, Mexican, que pasta. I'm just, so if anybody can help me later on regarding, getting guys and the Californians hooked up, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Hey, Alec.
Eddie.
I got a question for all you guys. One of the things that AskTheCall looks for, or advisory looks for, a lot of times for mid-cities is outreaching to areas of need. I know the Spanish community is close-knit. A lot of people that are in prison meetings are close-knit, and the Native meetings are close-knit. What have you guys done personally or on the committees you're on to outreach to the remote areas of need in those in your respective communities that you guys have already established both?
My name's Stan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stan.
I ride a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, and I get to go to small communities. People call me all the time to go speak out in remote areas where they only have two or three people at meetings. And they're always so grateful when I come. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if I'm carrying a clear-cut message, but they're just happy to have somebody else come and see them. So if any of you guys know of small towns that you want that you might take a road trip to, think about when we were kids and we got to go on a road trip, you know what I mean? Go out. Go to some of those meetings that are two or three people. Share your experience, drink, and hope. Thank you.
My name is Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
The central office for the Spanish AA in Tucson is on South 6th and 36th Street, so that's about as as nitty gritty as it gets. I mean, it's really in the heart of where the Hispanics need, the outreach for AA. When I first got sober, it was easier for me to go to a meeting with someone, so I didn't feel alone. But having gone to the Spanish meetings, I go a lot. I go alone a lot, by myself. And that helps me go through the fear of the uncomfortableness. Like, I really get past all my self-esteem issues when I can walk into a room by myself and not have to, look to the right or to the left that my friend is going to be there or somebody is going to be, going through fear regardless, getting through fear regardless is courage, and it takes a lot of courage. And I think it's of maximum usefulness that I can speak both languages. Translating and trying to carry the message in a different language.
You want to take it? Louie, alcoholic.
Hey, Louie.
Julio and Dre and myself and some other members of our group would drive out to Cells to the Tohono O'odham Reservation. And the directions out there, like you go that way and you go that way and you take a left at the building and then go behind the tree and then there's a cow facing the east, and you know what I mean? But and that was good times.
because we would actually go as a group and we would travel together. And that was kind of how Dre and I got better acquainted, just as friends, you know, because we would drive for an hour to go out there. And I used to love that because it was the meeting before the meeting. And even if nobody showed up, we had a meeting after the meeting, you know, on the way back. And going through the Border Patrol, there's this one little white face. And I think it was her that said, he's our lawyer. And they just laughed and said, okay, go. Anyway, take it. Take it.
We still have 8 minutes for questions and comments.
So what does Flagstaff call their young people up there? Flagasky Bob?
That's awesome.
Just Flagstaff basketball thing. Thank you.
I'm Andrea. I'm still an alcoholic.
Hi, Andrea.
I showed up at the Free Spirit Group right after Tacky Paw came in, I believe. And the way the story has there is Ray, another member who's not was unable to come because he had a baby yesterday. He used to sit out in the parking lot by himself on the reservation for weeks. Nobody would come to the meeting. The security actually went up to him and said, we can't keep opening this building for you. You're going to have to move if nobody else comes. And then from what I understand, Eddie and Louie and a bunch of Tag Paw people showed up. And I thank God for that. Me and myself and a few other people who did not want to be able to go back to the reservation showed up at the same time, and we kind of formed it in a strong sense. I'm very grateful that we still have lasting friendships and relations with these people that came in. You know, outsiders on the reservation is usually not very welcome. We did try to take a meeting out there to sales. We aren't doing it now because of Alcoholics Anonymous. We all got jobs, for one.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we're unable to meet our buddies in carpool out there, but I'd like to pass on to our newcomers. Thank you for letting me be in service. We still have a few minutes for more questions. Comments. 5 minutes, folks.
I got one last question, just because I know my last experience. But as far as like going down there, like when you guys look at it as being of service, and you kind of go into it as like a service call, and then you kind of get like that blessing of relationships and the different kind of things that come from it. I just want to kind of hear your experience like of the intimacies that were formed from that, and how 12-step opportunities kind of, what's your motive for going in and the experience from it, like the end result of that, like, what's the experience you would not miss, and what that looks like for you guys in your communities now, how your outreach efforts has surrounded that network for you guys. Does that make sense? I don't know.
My name is Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
Recently, the Spanish Intergroup had elections to change the, the steering committee. We have a new coordinator, chairperson, myself as a secretary, and a new treasurer. And I know that there was a lot of discord between the groups and their support to their central office. But now that we have a whole new set of fresh faces, we had our first meeting last night, and I can see the hope in their eyes. Like, I really could just see the spark, you know, that they know that there's a whole new set of people that are going to handle things differently. We're going to have, like, you know, we're going to do things a different way as opposed to how it was done before. And just to see them have that hope, I just get a lot of hope from them, and I like to think that's what I'm bringing, you know, as a young person and as a woman, it's a predominantly male community. So you know, I want to get more people involved, and maybe even in some way, you know, form a young people committee in Spanish if possible. You know, like the possibilities are endless, and I can see that in their faces. So I'm really excited about that.
I got a family, yo. You know, that this whole thing with going out and try to get this bid, and we're going to go and join this group and blah, 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 blah. I've got more than just a home group out of that experience. I have a family, you know. I got my cousin Julio. but, you know, and relationships that I could never imagine. You know, because like when Adam and I took your car, Eddie, and went to the Paiute Res and picked up Cassandra, you know, we went from Pascua to Paiute, and then we went up to Salt Lake City, you know, and we got stuck in a snowstorm on the way back and all this crap that happened, you know. We formed a relationship and a brotherhood that will never die, you know. And that's just... And even, you know, my sister on the red, Cassandra, you know, it's like a bond that can never be broken as a direct result of service. If you want to even call it service, you know. And then also whenever I went to Flagstaff to the state conference, the AA state convention or whatever, I felt weird being surrounded by so many white people. Which I thought that was weird. but you know, a family, if anything else, you know. And the big book even talks about it in working with others, how that fellowship will grow up around upon you. And that's a promise. And it's a promise that I've experienced in young people's. And it's a promise that I've experienced in outreaching to other communities.
My name is Stan, and I'm an alcoholic. I just wanted to talk about one other thing, the importance of home group. You know, when I first came into the rooms, it was told to me that I needed to get a home group, and I got a home group. And you guys heard me share from the podium about going and selling Cokes at the Alcapon. That was one of my home group members that suggested that I go sell Cokes at the Alcapon. It got me through that first Christmas. Home group is so important to me. Because I've learned everything I learned. I got into service. Home group members pushed me into being a GSR. And I started doing that. And I've been able to grow in my sobriety through service. And I got pushed into that service from my home group. Home group's really important. And it's not, to me, it's not as big a deal as it used to be. And I see it in the rooms that people don't really talk about their home groups as much as when I first came into the rooms, everybody talked about their home group. These guys are talking about their home group, the relationship they have with their family. I have a home group, and I go to it every week. And if I'm not there, somebody's on the phone calling me, asking me if I'm okay and why I'm not at the home group. Mark's one of my home group members. If I don't see him, I call him. He don't see me, I call him. Or he calls me.
Somebody call
That's
somebody.
All I got. Somebody. Thank you.
Thank you. We've asked Jenny to read us the promises.
Jenny Alcoholic.
Jenny.
Third set promises. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or hereafter. We were reborn.
Please help me close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
We gotta pray and shit. No, I'm just playing. Oh, is that a rip? Turn it off.